Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Avodah Zarah Daf Samach Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. In our previous shiur, we started a topic that is contained, as far as our marking system, within brackets. The general topic started with Rav Yanai loaning Peros Shvius to the poor, he borrowed Peros Shvius from the poor, and after borrowing in the seventh year, he would pay them back in the eighth year. The Gemara made a comment that a parallel behavior in the case of Esnan would be allowed. For the general introduction to the topic, we would refer you to the previous shiur. However, as far as today's shiur is concerned, we are dealing with a section of a brisa that was quoted at the bottom of Samach Beis Amud Beis, where the brisa indicated that if an individual gave a harlot, a sheep, let us say, as a gift, and afterwards had intimacy with her, the Tanaic source that we saw said it's mutter, meaning that that sheep is allowed to be brought as a korban, and is allowed to be brought as a sacrifice in the Beis HaMikdash, and is not labeled as an Esnan Zona, an item that the Torah clearly forbids as being used as a sacrifice. The Gemara asks that, why should this be allowed? Why should it be allowed as a korban? We're, of course, not advocating intimacy with a harlot. That's not part of our discussion. We're dealing with, of course, the item given to her as payment for services, which, generally speaking, the Torah says is forbidden. However, we have a situation where he gave her an animal that would be suitable as a sacrifice, and he then had relations with her, and the source, as we said a moment before, says that it's allowed to be used as a sacrifice. The Gemara's question, with which we had left off last time, was, well, he gave her an animal. When he has relations, why not say that the label of Esnan, the gift given to a harlot, should set upon that animal retroactively? In other words, if you have the animal sitting around in her possession, she received it as a gift, he then had intimacy with that woman, why is it that the label of Esnan, namely the prohibition of Esnan, does not set upon that animal? So we saw Rebbe Lozer answer on the second line from the top of Samach Gimel Amud Aleph. He said, Kishikodma vehikrivoso, where she offered it as a sacrifice before the act of intimacy took place. We also would like to note at this point a geometric form that you see and explain it. On the top, second line from the top, you see a bow tied expression. On the side, on the outside margin, we have a mivne heading, an explanation of the structure, a structural note. On this omid, you'll notice two of these bow tied expressions. And we explain on the outside margin, Beis Matzovim, two situations. Benosan lo esnan v'achar kach bo'aleh, where he gave a harlot a gift and then afterwards had relations with her. Mahi osto im ho'esnan lifnei habio, what did she do with the esnan? These are going to be the two situations that will be dealt with. What did she do with the esnan, with the gift, before the intimacy? So the first example is where she actually offered it as a sacrifice on the altar before the intimacy took place. Well, what's done is done. The Gemara will analyze this in the next few lines with three stages of analysis, as are indicated by the triangles that you see. The second bow-tied expression features a different situation. Rav Hoshaya will be asking a question, what is the din if kodmo v'hikdishoso? You'll notice that's in a bow-tied expression as well, where instead of actually offering it before the intimacy, she declared it as a sacrifice. She was makdish it. She sanctified it as a korban before the intimacy. Does that help? Does that make any difference? That will be the subject of the question Rav Hoshaya raises a bit later. For the time being, though, the Gemara now is going to focus on this case of where she offered it as a, she actually offered it. In other words, it was slaughtered and offered on the altar before the act of intimacy took place, and that's the case that the Braisa says is mutter. Now the Gemara proceeds with a three-stage analysis, trying to understand what happened over here. We'll also, in addition to the triangles which indicate that each stage of analysis, we'll also see a double underlined expression. And this double underline is explained also in the outside margin as Havlotos HaKoshi. We will accentuate the problem with whatever explanation we offer at each stage. So the Gemara asks, Heichi Domi, what are the circumstances of her having offered it as a sacrifice before the intimacy? E de Omar Law Kni Lech Me'achshav, if the gentleman gave her an animal and said, this is yours from right now. It's yours completely before, it's yours from right now, and they as of yet have not had any intimacy. So to that the Gemara says, Pshita Deshori, it's obvious that this would be an okay situation, an allowed circumstance, to halesei b'shas bia. It's not around anymore at the time the intimacy took place. So in effect, you have a woman who received a gift. She would then offered it as a sacrifice. What's done is done. What, there's no problem with that. Rashi, on the second line from the top of the Rashi commentary, says, Knime achshav. If he says, this is yours before the act of intimacy took place, pshita de mutter, it's obvious that it's allowed. The afogav de almanas bio yahave mihalo, even though it was given on condition that the intimacy would take place, kevan de mekami bio yahave mihalo, since he actually presented it to her before the intimacy, lav schar biohu, it's not payment for the intimacy. It's, we can look at it as a gift given to her in a total fashion in anticipation of the bia, but it's given to her lock, stock, and barrel before the intimacy. And we're saying at that point she already offered it as a sacrifice, namely before the intimacy. There's no problem with that. The Gemara continues, V'i dolo amar lo kni lech me'afshov, and if he gave her the sheep and did not say expressly to her, accept it from right now, well, hechi motzi makrovo, how could she have the right to offer it? V'ish ki yakdish es beiso kodesh omar rachmono. The posuk says, when a man sanctifies his house, omar beiso birshuso, just like one's house is something in his possession, af kol birshuso, so too, items that he is able to sanctify must be in his or her possession. So if this fellow presented her with a sheep but did not indicate that it becomes her possession immediately, then how could she offer it as a korban? Just like we said, that which can be offered is only that which is in your is under your ownership and possession. Ela, third stage, the Omar law, he declared, he said to her, Leheve gabech ad shas bia, let this animal be in your domain until the intimacy. And if you need it for any reason before the intimacy, then it is yours from right now. Rashi, on the fourth line from the top, he says, Hilkoch, Itzrich Masnisin Lashmina, the Tanaic source needs to tell us, the Afogav, the Omer law, Lo Nikni Loch Ad Shas Bia, since he initially told her it's not yours until the intimacy, came with a hodar amalo, since he then added us an additional clause and said, "E mitzterich lech kni me'achshav," but if you happen to need it for any reason before the intimacy, then let it be yours from right now. Havio lo matnas chinam ki shaklusei v'akrivtei. It is viewed as a total gift, a gift without strings attached, a matnas chinam, and therefore when she offers it as a sacrifice before the intimacy, it's an acceptable sacrifice. Boi Rav Oshaya. Rav Oshaya now raises a question, and you can see by the length indicator that we have on the side to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, there's a shin that's encircled, she'ela, with a vertical dashed line indicating that the lines opposite this marking are part of the question. Namely, the lines of Gemara that are opposite this vertical line form the question. The question will be presented in two parts, two sides. Aleph, and you'll see an aleph encircled on the next line, and two lines after that, a squiggle underline expression, oydilmo beis, or possibly a second side to the question. So, boy Rav Oshaya, kotmo v'hikdishoso mahu. A woman, a harlot, was given a sheep as a gift, and she sanctified it. This is in contradistinction to what was mentioned earlier in the first bow-tied expression where it featured a case that she actually offered it. Here, she sanctified it before the intimacy. When the intimacy actually takes place, the animal is still alive. It hasn't been offered as a sacrifice yet. Will this be an acceptable sacrificial situation? The question then, once again, is kodma v'hikdishoso mahu. If she initially sanctified it, what is the din? Kevan d'omamar, since there is a well-known halacha that says, amiroso l'gavoh kemesiroso l'hedyo, that a verbal dedication to heaven, to the Beis HaMikdash, is like a transfer of ownership when dealing with a commoner. In other words, speech with regard to heaven accomplishes what a formal kinyan gesture, a formal transfer of ownership would accomplish when you're dealing with a commoner. So since we have this principle of amiroso legavoh kemesiroso lehedyot, kemande akrivte domi, maybe it's viewed as if it's already been offered. So that even if the animal is still alive at the time of intimacy, since it was dedicated to a heavenly purpose before the act of intimacy, it's considered totally out of her domain, and hence it doesn't take on the label of an esnan zoina. Oydilmo. Or possibly we could say that the animal is standing around and it's still extant, and therefore the hektish alone, the sanctification alone, would not grant license for it being offered as a korban. At this point in the Gemara, you notice we have a bracketed section, and the length of the brackets is indicated with our length indicator, the vertical dashed dotted line that you see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. We see a question was raised, and all of the lines within the brackets, if you skip them initially, you'll see after them, the conclusion of this is teku, meaning the question remains unresolved. And our bracket note explains this. You'll see this if you notice in the margin a starred comment. Matras ha-sograyim, the purpose of these brackets is ledaleg, to skip, kedei laharoi shebesoif nishar she'loso shel Rabbi Yeshaya, to show that in the end of this the question that he raises remains a question. Within the brackets, the Gemara raises a question on the question, so to speak. Namely, Rav Oshaya is raising a question, but could it not have been answered from that which Rabbi Elazar said above? Rabbi Elazar was on the second line from the top. He introduced the idea of kishekodma vehikrivoso, that the gift given to the harlot was okay under what circumstances? Well, only if she actually offered it. So one could deduce from that if it wasn't actually offered, it should not be allowed, even though she sanctified it before the intimacy. Why then does Rav Oshaya have a need to raise his question when it could have been resolved from an inference drawn from the halacha of Rabbi Elazar? So let's read this now in the Gemara. V'tifshot, why not conclude Rav Oshaya's question or answer his question, Mida Rebbe Elazar, from that which Rebbe Elazar said above. The Omer Rebbe Elazar, Shekodma v'hikrivaso. The case that was allowed with regard to the gift given to the harlot was where she offered it before the intimacy. Dafko hikrivaso, only if it was actually offered. Avo hikdishal so lo, but a mere sanctification of the animal would not have been sufficient. So the question is, why does Rabbi Shaya raise his question and not resolve it from the inference we just made? The Gemara answers, the Rebbe Elozer Gufei ka mebayale. The answer of Rebbe Elozer above itself poses a dilemma to Rabbi Shaya as follows. Mifshat pshito le Rebbe Elozer de hikrivoso davka. Is it an obvious point to Rebbe Elozer that only in a case where she sacrificed it would things be considered okay, but if she merely dedicated it, so according to Rebbe Elozer, it would not have been okay because it is around at the time of the intimacy, O Dilma, or it might be as follows, that Hikrivoso pshitole, the hikrivoso case is most obvious, that's okay, where she offered it before, she offered it as a sacrifice, literally, before the intimacy. The hikdishioso misafkale, and the case of hekdish, where there was sanctification, that to Rebbe Elozer himself may have been a question. Teku. So this issue, where the Hikdishoso stands in Rebbe Elozer's realm himself, is itself not clear. You know, and that's what Rebbe Shaya was raising. Where would Rebbe Elozer himself stand with regard to the Hekdish? Namely, is the Hekdish obviously insufficient because it is around, or the Hekdish might also have been a possibility of being okay because of the principle of Amiroso Ligavoa Kemesiroso Lehedyo. As we go on in the Gemara, we have another diamonded expression. This is a second diamond that to the one found at the bottom of Samach Beis Amud Beis. This was indicated by the Mivneh heading that was found in the margin of Samach Beis Amud Beis, where the Gemara will be focusing on the two clauses mentioned, or the two examples that were cited in the Brisa at the bottom of Samach Beis Amud Beis, which both resulted in the gift given to the harlot as being mutter. So now the Gemara focuses on the case of Bo Oleo V'achakach Nosan Lo Esnena Mutter. A man had relations with a harlot and then gave her the Esnan, the gift. Mutter, it would be okay as a sacrifice. The Gemara now asks a question. Viramini, we raise a contradiction. Bo oleha v'achakach nosan lo afilu mikan ad sholoi shonim esnena oser. It features the same situation where he had relations with her, with the harlot, and then gave her a gift, even if he gave it to her 3 years after the intimacy, the gift, the animal given to her, would not be acceptable as a sacrifice. Yet our Mishnah says if intimacy took place and afterwards he gave her the gift, the animal, which is the gift, is acceptable. Amar of Nachman bar Yitzchak, Amar of Chista, loy kashya. There is no contradiction. Ha di Omar hisboali li betleze. The situation that is forbidden is where he said, have intimacy with me for in exchange for this animal, and he indicates specifically which animal. And therefore, whenever he gives it to her, it's usur, because it's considered earmarked, so to speak, for this purpose from right now. So she's koine it from right now. She acquires it from right now. And in effect, the animal is serving as payment for the relations that take place. So at the point that the relations take place, the animal becomes labeled as an esnan zona and hence forbidden. the case that's mutter, namely the Tanaic source that was seen on the bottom of Samach Beis Omid Beis, Ha di Omar law, it's where he told her, his boali betle stam. He said, have relations for me with me in exchange for a sheep. Not this sheep, but for a sheep. And it wasn't specified which one. The Gemara goes on and asks, V'chi omar lo betle ze mai havi, ha-mechser mashicha. And if he said, have relations for me in exchange for this sheep, why should it be forbidden? She hasn't drawn it. Mashicha is an act of, it's a gesture of ownership whereby someone draws something unto themselves. So she didn't pull on it. She didn't draw it. She didn't do mashicha to it. So why is it considered hers from the point of intimacy? It shouldn't be considered hers at all. And therefore, when it eventually gets to her, it gets to her after the intimacy took place. So the Gemara answers one of a couple of approaches. Bezoina oivedes kechavim delokanya b'meshicha. We're talking about a Gentile harlot. Gentiles and their forms of acquisition do not parallel forms of acquisition that take place between two Jewish parties. So that if you have a man who's going to be paying the Gentile woman harlot, the sheep, and he says to her, his boali li betle ze, and he specifies an animal, and since in order for her to gain ownership she does not have to do the act of meshicha, she is said to acquire it immediately, and the animal being specified for the act of intimacy hence takes on, when the intimacy takes place, it takes on the label of Esnan Zona, and therefore that animal would be Usser, as was indicated by the source that the Gemara brought in. The Iboy Esema, another Hezber, another explanation why there's no Meshicha. Le'olom Bezoina Yisraelis, we're talking not about a Gentile harlot, but a Jewish woman. Le'kagon Dekoy B'chatzera, and we'll talk about a case where the animal is standing in her chotzer, in her yard, in her domain, and therefore since it's standing in her domain there's no need for Meshicha, and by his saying his Baali B'tlize it becomes forbidden. Question: he decoy b'chatzera, if that is the circumstance, so why does the source say bo oleho v'achar kach nosan lo, where he had relations and he subsequently gave it to her, her kanyula. She's already acquired it. If it's standing in her chotzer, so she's already acquired it. And hence the term achar kach, which means afterwards gives it to her, would be inaccurate. Lo yitzricha. The case is as follows. Deshavyo nihalo apoitiki. He declared it to be unto her an apotiki. And this will be explained immediately. The Omar law, he said to the harlot, I maisino lech zuzi mikan ad yoim ploni mutav. If I pay you cash for the intimacy that we will have together, so then that the cash will be your payment. The Eloi, and if I don't come up with the cash, shakle be'esnenech, then take it as payment for the services. And hence the term achar kach nosan lo would be appropriate, because he wasn't giving it to her immediately, but he was declaring it as a backup form of payment in the event that he does not come up with the cash. At this point we now go back to the opening of this sugya, which was started on Samach Beis Omid Beis, where, as we mentioned before, in the house of Rav Yanai, they borrowed Peros Shvias from Aniyim. Peros Shvias are fruits that have limited use, because when they go out of season, one must destroy them. One must do biur on them. And the Beyanai, after borrowing from the poor their Peros Shvias, they would pay back in the next year Peros Shminis. and that's considered okay. And the Perush Shminis, being that they're from a standard year, not the sabbatical year, not the Shemias year, there's no din biur on those fruits. And they don't take on the characteristic of Chalifei Shvias. They don't take on the characteristic of something given in exchange for Perush Shvias, because when something is given in an exchange for Perush Shvias, then the item that's exchanged for it would take on restrictive characteristics. Mosiv Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes raises an objection to Rav Yanai. This is a question that is accompanied by a long question marking, as you can see to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, an encircled kuf that continues to the upper part of Samach Gimel Amud Beis. Mosiv Rav Sheshes. We also have this inverted triangle with a colored in tip. This was explained on Samach Beis Amud Beis as being part of a back and forth discussion. In this case, with the inverted triangle, it represents a kasha, an attack on Rav Yanai's practice. So the question is, Mosiv Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes raises an objection. Oimer Adam Lechamorov Ulepoyalov. A person can say to his workers, they may be Gentile or ignoramuses, chamorov are people that drive donkeys, or other workers, l'chu v'ichlu, b'din or zeh, go buy a lunch, go and have your meal with this coin, a dinar coin, tsu ushtu b'din or zeh, or go and have a drink with this dinar. V'eino choshesh lo mishum shvius v'lo mishum meiser v'lo mishum yayin nesach. And the balabos, the owner of whatever property is being worked on, he doesn't have to worry about problems that would be associated with Shemitah. In other words, when these workers go out and buy their meals, maybe they're going to be buying Shvius produce or Meiser produce or forbidden wine. So the source is telling us that if he gave them a coin and they went and bought these prohibited things, that's their problem, so to speak. He doesn't have to worry about that. The Rashi points out on the fourth line from the top, where we've dashed underline it in our marked Gemaras, Da'iu lo sofi luhu midi, ela priti yavlu. The Balabayas himself hasn't fed them any of these forbidden foods, he's simply given them cash. However, v'im omar lahem tzu v'ichlu v'ani porea, tzu ushtu v'ani porea, he says, go out, have a meal, and I will pay for it. Go out and have a drink, and then I will pay for it. In this case, the balabos, the hirer of the workers, the one who's the owner of the property, he himself is going to be paying for the food they ate. This situation is a problem. Then one does have to concern himself with the fact that he may in fact be paying for Shvius produce, seventh year produce that they ate, and one is not allowed to conduct commercial ventures with Shvius produce, or they might have eaten Meiser Sheni food improperly, and he'll end up paying for that, or they may have drank Yayin Nesech. They may have drunk Yayin Nesech, and he ends up paying for the Yayin Nesech they drank. Alma ki kopar, we see from here that when he is paying off the debt, demei isur kopara, he's paying for that which was prohibited. Hachanami, so too in the case of the Bei Rav Yanai, when the Bei Rav Yanai pay back the aniyim in the eighth year, ki kopara, when they are paying back, demei isura kopara, they're in effect paying back for the Shemitah produce that the Bei Rav Yanai had borrowed, and therefore the payback is a payback for Shemitah material, and it should take on the restrictions of the Shemitah produce. And since the Shemitah produce is no longer in season, the payback should be considered forbidden. And so at this point, we have this Tanaic source, which is restrictive, posing a kashan beir of Yanai. Tirgum Rav Chisda. So Rav Chisda offers an explanation in defense of Rav Yanai. Bechenvoni hamakifo. The brisa that was restrictive is talking about a store owner, the fellow who was providing the food and drink to the workers. This is the chenvoni. He is a chenvoni hamakifo who regularly extends credit to this balabos, to this owner. The mishtabed lay. The balabos is considered bound or indebted to him, to the fellow providing the food. The kevon de urche laakufi, since it is customary or regular, it's a regular situation where the store owner, the owner of the food and drink that is provided to the workers, that chenvoni, since he's a regular in extending credit to this balabos, koni le dinor gabe, it's as if the chenvoni owns cash that is in the pocket of the balabos, so to speak. Let's see Rashi. Koni le dinor gabe, chenvoni, somech al ze. The chenvoni relies on this. Shekvar hikir boi shekol mokoim sheyeshno hadinor. He figures that wherever the owner has cash, koni lo le chenvoni, that cash is immediately acquired by the fellow providing the food. Hilkoch chalifi ninu. Therefore, it's a direct exchange. In other words, the coin in the pocket of the balabos is being used in exchange, in direct exchange for the yayin nesech that's being provided to the workers. Aval hanoch de bei Rav Yanai. However, in the story involving Rav Yanai, who borrowed shvius produce from the aniyim, came from the hanoch aniyim de mosvi lehu peri. Since the poor that are loaning their peru shvius to the bei Rav Yanai, lav chenvoni harogil akifaninu. It's not a parallel case of people that are regular in dealing with one another, where one extends regularly extending loans to the other. In other words, these aniyim that are loaning the peru shvius to the bei Rav Yanai are not, they don't always extend loans to the bei Rav Yanai. Lo somcha daite kulehai. They don't have such a reliance upon the Beir of Yanai as far as payback is concerned. V'lo mishtabilu the Beir of Yanai, and therefore the Beir of Yanai are not bound to them, to the aniyim, to the poor that loan their perishvias. Hilkoch ki pora li'achar zman, when payment does eventually take place, lav chalipe shvias ninu. It's not viewed as an exchange for the peros shvias. There wasn't an intense bond between the aniyim and Beir of Yanai in the first place. The Gemara goes on, basing itself on Rav Chisda's observation or Rav Chisda's answer. The Gemara goes on and says, "Avo chenvoni she'ein makifo mai." And what would be the situation if you have the fellow providing the food and drink to the workers is a fellow that doesn't offer credit to the owner, to the balabos? What would be then? Mutter. Then we're suggesting by inference that it would be allowed. In other words, the only time that the Brisa says it's not allowed, that arrangement wasn't allowed, is because the chenvoni is always extending credit to the balabos, and the balabos is bound to the chenvoni. But if it wasn't that close a relationship or that regular a relationship, it would be okay. Well, if that's the case, ihachi, here we raise a question. You can see by virtue of the fact you have an inverted triangle, ihachi Aditoni, instead of teaching the heter in the resha of the source that was on the top of this page, said as follows. Here is a quote: Tzu v'ichlu b'dinar zeh, tzu ushtu b'dinar zeh, where we said that if the owner gave his workers a coin and said, "You go buy your own meal," that was okay. And by the way, we have a long question on our hands right now. You can see that by the long question indicator. To the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, you see a kuf that's encircled with a vertical dashed line. So we're saying that if an ein makifo situation would have been allowed, why then does the resha, in seeking a permissible case, it cited the case of the owner giving them cash, Liflog velisni bidida. You could have presented a contrast within the same case as follows. Bamed vor mamurim, when would things be mutter with regard to workers buying their food on the account of the owner? Bechinvoni hamakifo, dimishtabidle. When would that be? Let us correct ourselves. When would that be usur? When would things be usur? When would things be prohibited? That's if the fellow providing the food is a chenvoni amakifo, where he's constantly extending credit to the owner, the mishtabidle, where the owner is then bound to the chenvoni, and hence, when the owner actually pays for the food, it's a coin that's viewed as in direct exchange for the forbidden food that they may have eaten. Avol chenvoni she'ein makifo muter. But if it would be a store owner, the fellow providing the food, who doesn't regularly extend credit, then that arrangement should have been okay. So why does the source not teach this contrast? The oid chenvoni shein makifo, and furthermore, according to the inference drawn from Rav Chisda, it seemed that in the ein makifo situation there was no shibud. Mi lo mishtabed, is that so that there's no shibud, that the owner is not bound? We have a teaching of Rava that says, and this teaching involves a case of a guarantor who motivates a lender to extend a loan to a borrower. Ha'omer lechavero, tain mono leploni, an orev, a guarantor, says to his friend, a malve, give some monam of cash to ploni, to so-and-so, a borrower. V'yiknu kol nechosai loch, and all of my property will be bound to you, is nikne to you, acquired to you. You, the lender, kona midin orev, he does acquire it. So, in the case involving the chenvoni, once the balabos, the fellow who hired the workers, says to the chenvoni, hey, you feed them, and I will pay you, even if he's not a regular extender of credit, the deal is clinched, so to speak, and kona, the chenvoni has a claim on the balabos. So why should an ein makifo situation be allowed? Elo omar rova, loishno makifoi veloishno she'ein makifoi. As far as a chenvoni is concerned, it doesn't matter whether he's a regular in extending credit or not a regular in extending credit. Afagav de mishabedle, even though there may be a shibud that is formed, kevon de lo miyachid shibude lo mitzar. Since the shibud, the lien, is not delineated, it's not miyuchad, we don't see what exactly is going to be collected, so there the situation would not be prohibited. And therefore, since we don't have a miyachid shibude, the deal is okay, or the payback is all right. So with that in mind, we have no kasha on the case of Rav Yanai, because in the case of Rav Yanai, there was no yichud shibud. If we look in the Rashi, on the last narrow line, Elo Amar Rava, Lo Tisni Taimu Debraisa Mishim Shibudu V'makifo. Don't explain the Braisa, which featured a, on the top of the page, where there was a prohibition in the case of the chenvoni, where the balabos told his workers, go and eat and I will pay. Dafilu ein makifo, even if there's no formal or regular extension of credit, ika shibuda, there is a shibud. There is a one is bound to pay off the debt. So the balabos is bound to pay off the debt of food that his workers ate. Omiu the debayer of Yanai lo tikshi. However, as far as the Rav Yanai case, there's no question. The bain makifo, bain ein makifo, Rashi goes on. Afogav de mishabdile nichse l'shumi, even though the Beir of Yanai is bound to pay off the debt, Since the Beir Rav Yana never delineated money with which the loan would be paid up with, lav chalipa ninu v'lo mitzar. Therefore, there's no exchange. It's not viewed as an exchange for the peros shvius, the peros shvius that the Beir Rav Yana borrowed. There is no specific cash or means of payback that is delineated immediately. Therefore, it's allowed. If that be the case, if you have a situation where there's no yichud shibu, there's nothing delineated as the means of payback that makes the situation okay, then it's upon us to explain the brisa at the top with the chenvoni and the workers. The hocha, and you'll notice we have diamonds coming up, these are explained on the margin under the mivneh heading, two hezberim noisofim, two additional explanations, lamokor, umir odom lechamorov, at the bottom of Samach Gimel Omer Aleph, Besof Samach Gimel Omer Aleph, Acharei Shezbiru Shurav Chisto Lo Hitzliach. After we see that Rav Chisto's explanation was unsuccessful, with Rav Chisto on the upper part of this page tried to explain the prohibition based on Chenvoni HaMakifo, right now we're saying the Makifo issue or factor is not an explanation for that source. What is the explanation of the source with the Chenvoni and the his extending food to the workers of the Balabas? The Hocham Rav Papa Kigon Shehikdim Loi Dinar. The case with the Chenvoni on the top of this page, where there was a prohibition, is where the Balabas, the owner, who had extended money, cash to the Chenvoni at the outset. Rashi says Shehikdim Lo Balabayas Dinar LeChenvoni Kodim Sheshalach Etzlo. He gave him cash before he sent his workers to the store to get their lunch. The hashta midabal habayis kochli. At this point, they're eating their perushvias or their yayinesech on the account of the balabayis himself, the sur di behu, and it's his own iser. He is in effect directly giving them or paying for their yayinesech, and that's a problem. Omar Rav Kahana amris l'shmeitzer kameid Rav Zvid midahar da'o. Rav Kahana tells us that he said over Rav Papa's teaching to Rav Zvid, Amalei, so Rav Zvid reacted and said, "E hochi adetoni." Instead of teaching the iser in the seifa as follows, "Tzu v'ichlu, tzu shtu v'ani porea," which is what it does in fact teach. The expression "v'ani porea" would seem to be inaccurate if this is the case. Once again, the dotted underline expression on the previous line, which is a quote from the actual source, said "vani porea," which means "I will pay." But if you're telling us that the case featured on the top was a case where he already paid, it should be that he's telling his workers, "Go to the store, and I will make a calculation of how much change is left, so to speak, because I've already paid." Let's read that again. Tzu v'ichlu tzu shtu v'ani mechashev miboyalei. Amalei. So he answers. In fact, that's what it should say. Tni tzu v'ani mechashev. Rav Ashi Omar, a second approach to explain the prohibition in the source above. Kegoin shenotal v'nosan v'yad. The food given to the workers was actually taken by the balabayas from the hands of the chenvoni, and the balabayas then gave that food to his workers. So he was giving them the prohibited food, and that's why it says it's also it's forbidden. If that's the case of notal v'nosan b'yad, that he took from the chenvoni and gave to his workers, adetoni tzu v'ichlu tzu shtu, instead of saying go and eat, go and drink, which is mashma, he didn't go with them. It sounds like he did not go with them. Tlu v'ichlu tu ushtu miboyle. It should have more accurately say, take and eat. Take, in other words, take from me. I'm giving it to you. And yet it doesn't say that. Omalei. So he answers, tini tlu v'ichlu tu ushtu. So repair the source or refine the source, and it should read as this. Tlu v'ichlu tu ushtu. And that's why the case is forbidden. That's because he himself, the Baal HaBayis himself, is giving them directly the Ayin Nesek or the Shvius or the Meiser. As you can see, we have a slash in the Gemara that indicates that which follows is a new idea. Let us glance at the outside margin. You notice we have a Mivneh heading, which also indicates until Samach Dalam Abayis. You'll notice this house marking. We have three of them, and the first one is right here, and the next one will be in the middle of Samach Dalet Omid Aleph, and a third one will appear on Samach Dalet Omid Beis. The third one will be at the second line from the top of Samach Dalet Omid Beis. What are these? So we have in our outside margin the Mivneh indicator. Three she'elois shedonu b'hem kvutza shurabonim. Three questions that a group of rabbis dealt with. U'lechol echad oiner Rav Nachman. Each one of these, you'll see Rav Nachman offers his answer, and he will be featured by a double underline, and you can see that in this case at the second line from the bottom. The topic heading we assign to this question is the nosei, the topic. Socher lishbor b'yayinah. Someone was hired to smash barrels of forbidden wine, of Yayin Nesek wine. Haim Schoro Mutter, is the payment that he gets for smashing these barrels and spilling out the wine, is that payment, that salary, or that wage that he gets allowed? Me'achar Sheroitza B'kiyomo Ad Shish Bereim. Because the fellow getting paid for this is actually interested in the barrels, in the wine, remaining intact until he comes around. If it's smashed or broken or it's spilled out before he comes, he's not going to get any pay. The double underline is featured in the Mivneh. The double underline is Havlotas Piskei Rav Nachman B'sholosh HaSheilois Shemesumonos with the house. We accentuate Rav Nachman's ruling. We will also see a bow tie form at the bottom of this page. Divrei Siwa L'Psak Shel Rav Nachman B'Sheila Nochachi. Points that will try to be a support to Rav Nachman's answer concerning this first question. So let's start the Gemara. Yosef Rav Nachman V'Ulo V'Avimi Bar Popi. These three rabbis were sitting. V'Yosef Rav Chiyo Bar Ami Gabayu, and Rav Chiyo was sitting with them. V'Yasvi V'Komabayu. They were sitting, and the question was raised amongst them. Sochroi Lishbor V'Yayinesech Ma'o. Someone was hired to smash barrels and pour out and spill out the wine, the forbidden wine. Mahu, what is the story with regard to the money that he gets paid? Mi Amrina, there are two sides to the question. You can see Aleph, O Dilma, the next line you have a swollen O Dilma expression, Bays, second possibility. Mi Amrinon, Kevon de Roitze Bikiyomo Osir. Do we say that since he is interested in the wine staying around until he gets to it, therefore the wage would be prohibited? Because this fellow is interested, he's happy with the existence of this Yayin Nesech. Certainly he's happy with it until he gets around to destroying it. Oidomo, or possibly kolim ute tifla shapir domi. The ends justifies the means, so to speak, that since the job here, the goal here, is to reduce the unwanted, the tifla, the undesirable, since he's coming here to reduce the existence of that which is undesirable, that legitimizes the wages. Omer Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman answers, Yishbor v'tobo lo brocha. Let him smash the barrels and receive a blessing for it. In other words, it's quite all right. It's the wages are allowed. At this point in the Gemara, there is an attempt to support this ruling, and this will take the Gemara till the upper part of Samach Dalet Amud Aleph. So at this point, we will conclude our shiur for today.